The Mincing Rascals go zoom, zoom on a lot of topics this week. Hi, this is John Williams. We start with the weatherman in Springfield who spoke the truth to power and got fired. The Obama Center got a green light this week. The Rascals give it a yellow. We'll go to Northwest Indiana and debate how to handle the story of animal abuse at a dairy farm there. Eric Zorn reveals what happened to him when he said he wanted to leave the Cubs and join the White Sox Nation. It's not been all pretty. And the inescapable debate this week was about the U.S. women's soccer team. The Rascals couldn't escape that either. But none of that touches on why Scott Stannis, late in today's pod, said,
"Doesn't just show that everyone's pissed off O-meter is set to 12.
Share the Rascals with your friends and email me, John Williams, at WGNradio.com. If you've got a comment or want to advertise, right here. Today is Thursday. It's June 13th, and I swear to God, it feels like it might snow soon. 2019, it's 11:16 in the morning. Hi, this is John Williams, and we are the Mincing Rascals. This is a podcast we record in the opulent studios of WGN Radio. You can also hear me weekdays from 1 to 3.
I'm Steve Bertrand. I host the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio and other stuff.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, creator of the comic strip Prickly City, and co-host of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
And I'm Eric Zorn, the perky columnist from the Tribune. Wednesdays, Fridays, Sundays, every day, really, when you're online.
I was walking to work today, and I thought, it actually feels like football weather, and I'm just like, we are making 4th of July plans. It has not been 80 degrees for more than one day in a row. I'm angry about it.
I was on the phone on the way over here and walked out the door. I was on a call. And as I walked out the door, I went, holy Mary, mother of God.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's mid-June.
I'm glad we were able to address that.
I would like to take the opposite view.
It's been warm. Since we're talking about the weather, let's talk about this Springfield weatherman for a minute. Evidently, we won't be doing these things in order of national importance, and yet this is a page one CNN story today. Springfield, Illinois weatherman Joe Crane told his viewers June 5th that he doesn't agree with the use of the station's code red weather alerts.
We've heard you. We want you to know it's not us. This is a corporate initiative, the code red alert, and behind the scenes, many of us have tried to dissuade it for the last few months to try something else that's less controversial to the viewers.
He was taken off the air following that. Yesterday, on the heels of widespread protests, the station said they will use an alternate warning system. And today they also said that Joe Crane was let go. Who is surprised that Joe Crane no longer has a job?
I'm not surprised. I'm disappointed that Joe Crane doesn't have a job. I feel like the TV stations in particular overhype the weather, and they create a Chicken Little effect. That's the children's folktale metaphor that I'm looking for, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And the
sky is falling.
NBC does this now where they'll say there's a possible tornadoes. This puts 12 million Americans at risk. They're doing this on their nightly news, and it's like, that is just needlessly alarmist, and it makes people tune out when something is actually coming. There actually is a weather code red when a tornado is barreling down on Washington, Illinois, or something. And people are like, "Oh yeah, those weathermen, they're always getting too excited about stuff." And so I really agree with this guy, and I'm disappointed that they fired him. And he spoke truth to power and is paying the price. I hope that the advertiser boycott that's going on down in Springfield is effective, and they bring him back. Or some other station hires him, because it was a good thing that he did.
I agree with his sentiment, but I understand why he was fired.
Sure.
If I'm the owner of the product and I'm paying you to push the product, and you go on the air and say the guy pushing, you know, who owns the product is a nutcase, I can understand why he was fired.
Have you seen the video? Is he like doing network, like, "I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to red code anymore"?
It sounds to me like he was getting the backlash of people saying, "Why do you do this? Why do you do this?" And he finally said, "Look, this is why we do it."
That's evident by the thousands of comments on social media, letters to the editor, frequent calls to local talk radio shows. We've heard you.
He took over 2 minutes to just look at the camera and say, "Hey, it's a corporate cram."
And the corporation is?
Sinclair Broadcasting.
Sinclair Broadcasting. Talk about a dodged bullet here at WGN, right?
Yeah, no kidding. But the other thing about this is, doesn't this dovetail into a wider trend now, especially on cable news, where on CNN, I can't speak because I don't watch a lot of Fox. I don't want to watch a lot of MSNBC. But at Fox News, there's breaking news every 3 minutes. It really can't.
Have you had a Tribune alert anytime soon on your phone?
Well, that's a good point. Touche. But I also think Wolf Blitzer's show.
We are calm and measured. No.
I might be wrong, but I think Wolf Blitzer's show on CNN is called Breaking News. I think because every time I turn it on, they say, and we have breaking news. You know, it's two different subjects, I think. You know, you can say one, we might be overstating the weather, which I don't agree with, Eric. But the crux of it is that, you know, this guy was insubordinate. And even though he was brave for it and he initiated real change because of it, I also understand why his employers fired him.
It is mixed signals. If the guy was right, you shouldn't fire him. If he was wrong, you should. But he's clearly being fired for his insubordination, for him going rogue on their TV station.
And he's done damage to the TV station.
Who's done more damage today? The station for firing him or him for saying that? The station had a nice corrective. They said, thank you, Joe. They could have done this. We hear you and we hear our viewers, and we're now going to use what they now call weather worn, which feels like the best to me. It's like we get the idea, but that's not how people talk, but they're calling it weather worn.
I don't know if I would have fired him. I don't know. I understand why he was.
But as a manager, you have to think more than one move ahead on the chessboard and think, okay, this story goes away in 24 hours if we go, you know, we heard you, Joe. We're going to change that. Joe is a beloved weatherman, evidently, down there. It's now a national news story because you're so thin-skinned that you can't take criticism of this ridiculous corporate edict.
They were never going to change it because he had a good point. They changed it because their hand was forced because they fired him.
Yeah, but here's where the fight in our house is, and it's me and Steve Bertrand.
Sweetie.
Do you think that TV stations, in the name of ratings and longer viewership, hype bad weather?
I don't. I mean, I think when there's real serious weather, they have much more material. They have better tools to show us where storms are going and what they're about. And I enjoy watching it, frankly. And I don't feel, when I find out I'm one of the 38 million within potential danger, I'm not as scared. I just
share into the basement. Let's go.
That's a whole different topic.
You've not been watching a TV show and they say, we're interrupting this because in Streeter, we have on our Doppler radar a curve in the front that may indicate, and this is happening to the 1,800,000 people that live in Streeter, Illinois, and you think, okay, but your TV station serving Chicago.
You know what the first thing I do is when I see that, and I can tell you this confidently, the first thing I do, I pull out my phone and give my own radar and look, say, oh, is something going to come here? Because I kind of like thunderstorms. And
I think you're evading the question.
I think every last little snowfall, it's the lead story. It's one of the reasons I stopped watching local news. I don't watch local news anymore. And part of the reason is because they go nuts over
this ridiculous
routine. They go nuts over routine weather events.
Can I ask one question? It'll be the last question I ask during the life of this podcast. What in the hell did we start this conversation about? The very podcast. What did we start talking about?
The weather.
Okay. Thank you very much. No, it's something we all share, we all talk about, and it's of great interest to us.
No, the weather is of interest. I agree that, but I think being alarmist about the weather.
And until now, it was not controversial.
Well, John said it was going to snow.
A judge has ruled that the city was, as Lolly Bowen writes in the Chicago Tribune today, within its authority to approve the plans for the Obama Foundation Presidential Center in Jackson Park. Guys, I'm skeptical that restaurants and businesses are going to pop up around this thing, but they say it's going to generate $500 million. That'll be the value of the investment. It's going to use less than 4% of the park, but it's going to sort of cross the line of for private purposes using public land in Chicago, and we're very protective of our parks. What's your reaction, Scott, to the judge's decision to let this project go forward?
Well, it's also important to note that the judge was appointed by, say it with me, kids, Barack Obama. The decision flies in the face of the restrictions we've had. The same arguments we used to kill the Lucas Museum out there. And the Lucas Museum smacked of the same stuff. It wasn't going to be a Star Wars museum. It wasn't going to be an immersive experience in all things, you know, Star Wars or any of that stuff. It was going to be his collection of stuff. This thing is a collection of Obama's stuff. It's not a library.
It's not his records. It'll be digitized records.
Right. The tan suit will be there, I hope.
Well, but that's what presidential libraries are, pretty much, right?
This isn't a library.
I know, but I mean, there.
If it was a library, I'd be.
Really?
I'd
actually, so if there were books in there, there will be some books in there. But if it was.
Papers? Yes.
That would make a difference to you?
It would make a huge difference.
Well, that's interesting, because I kind of went through a phase of going to presidential libraries, and I enjoy going for the exhibit of them, you know, whether it's Jimmy Carter in Georgia or, you know, George Bush. So to me, they're like museums to the presidency. And the fact that the paper, LBJ's papers in his library, that means nothing to me because I'm never going to have access to them anyway.
No, but in terms of a facility, in terms of what I think a presidential library should do, I mean, you're right. They have turned into these like tombs and these monolithic things to the former presidents. But if it was a research, if it had a research component, that'd be great. This is a presidential center. I'm not even sure. Nobody can say precisely what that means. But it flies in the face of not building on the lakefront.
Scott, the thing is that the presidents don't have papers so much anymore because everything is digitized, right? So you can do this research anywhere and everywhere. I'm of a real mixed mind about all this stuff. I feel like it's a temple to Obama. Every president seems to build temples to himself. And I don't feel like this part of Jackson Park is kind of a scrubby, underused portion of Jackson Park. It's not this primo spot on the lakefront where Lucas wanted to build his museum. So I don't feel like we're taking this precious parkland in Jackson Park.
Are you worried that this will set a precedent, though, for future use?
I don't. The way they fought over this, no, I don't think so.
But that's the thing. But Eric, that's the thing is that the Lucas Museum was going in a parking lot. You can make a case that that's not really. The best use for that space.
I was a little torn on that as well because I didn't really care for the idea of that museum. I thought it was too much about George Lucas. I think if it had been a different kind of museum, different kind of conception there, I might have been okay with that because it is a parking lot. And I thought that Emmanuel made a good line when he said that it's being attacked by friends of the parking lot.
I don't think there's anything.
I can't get worked up about that corner of Jackson Park. I just can't. I can try, but I can't.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with presidents or people who support those presidents building monuments to themselves to celebrate their accomplishments or to tell their story. You know, Richard Nixon's got a great library. Reagan does. I've been to the Herbert Hoover one.
What a nerd. He's
in Iowa.
Never knew.
I think it's a Herbert Hoover Village or something in Iowa. You know,
Hooverville.
So, and you know, and he's a Chicago president. I think that's worth celebrating. And I think that's worth public land.
But it should have been his library.
But I don't understand why, if there were documents there, that it's more valid.
He's not going to have a library. And that's because there are no documents, I don't think. I think it's all digitized, isn't it? I mean,
no, of course there are documents. Of course.
What?
And they may be digital, but that's not what this is going to be.
I suppose Barack Obama particularly would have a cache of handwritten notes and typed things and emails that have been, you know, maybe edited. I mean, he authored a lot of his stuff, right? More so than, say, Bush did or the current president does. I think Barack Obama's paperwork would be intriguing to me. If I saw his acceptance speech or the post-Sandy Hook speech and I saw the papers upon which he sort of thought out his words, if those exist, I would be interested in seeing those.
Yeah, what I'm saying is I don't think those have to have an actual physical home. I believe that they're all digitized. But
are you optimistic that we will see an investment in that area the way all of these things are always sold?
Usually these things are overhyped anyway, and I think that impact of that such a structure is probably going to be minimal.
Let me ask you guys about the Fair Oaks Farm. The owner is aghast at what happened over there. In Indiana, Fair Oaks Farms has a cow milking and agri-tour operation. You can go see the cows. They sell milk from there to Fairlife Dairy, which markets their product as milk coming from cows that have comfortable, humane existences. The owner's signatures are on each carton. Now a class action suit has been filed. Fairlife, as well as Mike and Sue McCloskey, the owners of Fair Oaks Farms in Northwest Indiana, are listed as the defendants. A California man initiated the class. He said he pays extra money, a premium for the milk, but it's not as advertised. Why are you smirking?
Well, he's a fool. I mean, if you're going to spend up for milk because you think cows are pampered, I'm sorry, I don't.
Have you ever bought Eggland eggs? Those are supposed to be better eggs, better hens, better, fewer chemicals.
Yeah, in my house, we buy two sets of eggs. I buy the cheapest ones possible, and Sharon doesn't. This story to me is heartbreaking because my parents brought my kids there. Many times.
The videos
to
that have been released.
Calves being born and
right.
all of this stuff.
Show and, the cows being mistreated, and it's hard to watch.
But it's been, to me, it's been such a positive influence. You know, and I drive up and down 65 to go see my kids at college or whatever, and you go by it, and it's fun just to drive by, and they have fun billboards. Oh, you just missed the cows and all of this stuff. Like I said, my kids would go there with my parents.
Just missed the cows, so we killed them.
Well, but the other thing is, and I'm not, I don't know where I what I believe just yet or where I am in the whole thing. This is a very forward-thinking farm. I mean, I talk about them on the business lunch because they capture all the methane. And they create fuel for their trucks from the methane they capture. And then they build stations along the roads as they deliver milk to refuel with the methane they've captured from these cows.
Sorry I asked this. How do they capture the methane?
There's different, I don't remember the name of the machine, but they from the manure, they take a pot of manure.
Okay. They don't have a pipe. I know what you're thinking.
All right.
No, the pot of manure and releases the methane, and they take it and turn it into natural gas that they use to fuel their trucks. So this isn't just some farm that's trying to sell happiness. They are doing very progressive things,
too. So do you think that this is just poor oversight, that these are a few rogue employees?
I hope so. I really hope so. I do. I really hope that's the case. Now, they're negligent.
Yeah, they're negligent.
They should. If you're selling it this way, and if you're getting people to overpay for milk,
that's it.
Then you got to make sure that your cows are being pampered.
Right, because
so they are responsible.
People are paying a premium not because they're efficient. They're paying a premium because they think these are happy cows. Those are not happy cows. I don't know that anybody who consumes any product from animals is getting them from happy animals. The cows probably don't want to go through an industrial milking process. But I'm telling you, when you watch this, it'll make you not just think about not eating beef. It'll make you think about going to soy milk. You just think,
beef. You've had some of those people in your studio.
Yes, I have.
The incredible burger people.
Yeah. And that stuff is actually pretty good. It's catching up, I'll say that. But, Steve, I think that if you are selling happy cows, you have to have oversight. How are you fooled by this?
I don't disagree. I don't disagree with that.
I have very little sympathy for whatever becomes of this company because I think they're going to get what they deserve. And if they can recover, then they deserve that too. If this hurts their business, you're looking at me like that's an unfair statement. But
see, we are married. I can control it with a look.
Okay, let's move on. Eric Zorn has received some scorn for trying to switch his allegiance from the Chicago Cubs to the Chicago White Sox this year. He got kicked around on social media this or last week, was it, Eric, or is it ongoing?
Kind of ongoing.
He doesn't like the politics and practices he's seen from the North Side team, but some people are saying, well, you're a little bit of a hypocrite if you don't ... What are you hearing from your readership?
It's very interesting. The response to this column has been more voluminous and passionate than the response to all of my recent abortion columns put together.
Tell us why you're thinking about switching your fanship.
Well, no, I did. I announced in February that when the Cubs said they were going to go and form a pay channel next year, where you're going to have to. Almost all the free TV is going away with them, and all the sort of basic cable stuff is going away. You're going to have to subscribe to the Cubs broadcasting network with Sinclair in order to watch Cub games. That was like a bridge too far for me, and it comes after the Ricketts family being so involved in conservative politics, raising money for Trump, and I know they've got Laura Ricketts and is on the progressive side. But
the father was revealed to have exchanged some pretty unfortunate emails,
and I just said I'm just done with this team.
The Addison Russell thing,
and Aldous Chapman. I mean, there were a number of issues, and they just kind of built up. And I finally said, look, there's nothing that you can't change teams in this town. It's kind of a beautiful thing. And people said, Jerry Reinsdorf is not exactly a progressive Democrat, and that's true, but Jerry Reinsdorf doesn't rub my face in it. And they had a fundraiser for Trump at Wrigley Field last weekend.
Yeah, they did.
And I just said, enough. The they
is not the Chicago Cubs.
It's not Anthony Rizzo, but it's
and the, it's not Joe Madden.
It's not Joe Madden.
And it's not Tom Ricketts.
It's not Theo Epstein.
Well, there you go. So I think you got to be careful with that.
It's
they
true.
Use
I mean,
the venue.
No, it's quite true that there is if you demand purity from anybody. And any business.
Yeah, tell me the billionaire
it is Tom Ricketts. He's the chief kid.
Right.
But I mean he's part of the one doing the TV package.
Is it Todd or Tom? Which one?
Todd is the fundraiser, but Todd is the fundraiser hosting the fundraising.
And he is the chief fundraiser for Trump's national
2020 campaign. Yeah.
But it's Tom's Ball Yard too, and Tom's the one in the deal with the TV network. So
what are people saying to you?
Well, a lot of people are saying, thank you for doing this. I'm joining you. I'm going to the South Side. I've had it with the Cubs. A lot of people are also saying, I didn't count, I should have, but a lot of people are saying, yeah, you can't, you're messing up with my baseball fandom here, you're bringing politics into this, how dare you do that? to which my answer is Colin Kaepernick. You know, this happens all the time. But a thoughtful disagreement to this, I think, is that when you have a purity test, you're not going to be able to buy anything or do anything or go to any games because people aren't going to meet your high standards. And that is true. I just feel like there's a certain point that you get to. And I reached that point with the Cubs. Now, other people might say, well, I'm not there yet. But what if they start having to wear red Make America Great Again caps? I mean, do you have a limit? Does a sports fan have a limit as to what they will take from their team before they say, you know, that's enough? And the same thing is actually true. You talked about R. Kelly on your show yesterday and Michael Jackson and Louis C.K. You know, at what point do you say this celebrity, this person's actions have reached a point where I'm no longer going to patronize them? I'm not calling for a boycott of the Cubs. I'm just saying this is what I'm doing. It is hitting my threshold.
Have you watched or gone to White Sox games?
I have not gone yet because the WGN
hasn't
been giving me any tickets. So don't you guys have free tickets floating around here?
Yes, we do. But I'll get you free tickets.
I'm going to look for that.
But I think the real test of fanship is...
I've been watching the games.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, that's... And
I think, by the way, Eloy Jimenez, their new left fielder, the vaunted future of this team, at least as a hitter, not as a pitcher, has hit consecutive home runs that may be longer than any consecutive home runs any major leaguer has ever hit.
So Eloy will do more to make Arizona Sox fan than Todd could ever do.
You attract more flies with honey.
It looks like a fun team. They have a losing record right now.
Barely. But, I mean, if they're 500, that'll be the equivalent of the Cubs, you know, winning the pennant this year. That will be that spectacular for them. That'll be 19 games better than last year. And the Sox are not only one of the most exciting, fun, interesting teams to watch in Chicago, they're one of the most interesting teams in sports right now. They really have a fun, funny nucleus of players.
John, you and I, to the game.
As soon as we can get some free tickets.
Yeah.
speaking of sports, how do we all feel about the behavior of the U.S. women's soccer team beating Thailand 13-0?
I thought that was so disrespectful. It's a soccer game. You're up. You've just scored your 15th goal. And 13th goal. Okay, thank you. Well, I stand corrected.
I think your point's made.
I have a question about this. In some areas of soccer, and I think it's in World Cup, your margin of victory can figure into deciding...
Every goal counts in this
every
case.
Every goal counts, so...
They're going to win their bracket. They're going to win their I just odds don't on favorite to win it all.
Is there an actual valid
if
purpose
that's the, and if that's the case, which I can't speak to, but if that's the case, then you score your goal and you humbly kind of high-five your teammates.
That's the point. You don't go through. You don't celebrate after your 14th like you did after your first.
I didn't see this. Were they sliding
yeah.
the
turn? Oh, yeah. They were hugging and jumping.
That's bad form. do you take a knee? When you're leading 12-0, do you just like pass the ball back in your zone? Does that not patronize?
I think you let the parents play.
My son, we have a buddy of my son's living with us this summer. We were having dinner last night, and they played soccer together. Like, yeah, our coach would tell us when it was that big, don't do it. Or take hard shots. Take interesting shots. Don't just keep scoring. But I do think it's different if every goal does count.
Right, and this isn't Little League. This is the World Cup, right? These are the best players in the world who maybe have the right to play to their potential.
And they probably pulled out the starters, I'm assuming. The
margin between
play.
The starters and right. the bench
that's
keepers
probably true,
is
yeah.
nominal, right? I mean, that's what
is
I was
right?
told yesterday, that if you're on the U.S. Women's World Cup soccer team, you're one of the best players in the world.
You're not going to be one of those kids who used to pick flowers in the field. Like,
it's like right. Ruth out, DiMaggio in.
But you know, it's Thailand. Poor, passive Thailand. I mean, if it
little
was,
teeny players.
If it was Bulgaria or something, we'd feel better about it.
Did the Thai team complain about it? I'm serious. I haven't followed
right, don't you think?
Has there been a backlash?
I have not. Well, the only backlash I've seen is from the United States navel-gazing. But Phil Vitale, the restaurant critic at the Tribune, was here yesterday, and we were talking to him about it before we got to his restaurant review. He said, what would be more disrespectful to the Thai players? That the United States pass the ball
plays
amongst
keep
itself.
Play or something.
Right, right. I mean, that if they immediately dumbed down their game, wouldn't that be disrespectful too? Rather, you give them the spanking that the talent difference merits, and then you tell them, you know, welcome to the big leagues, good luck next year. But that's, you're in the big, you're playing with the big girls now, and this is what it looks like. Instead of patty caking for them and sort of treating them as something much lesser than...
Not every team qualifies for the World Cup, right?
Right. So, that is also true.
So this isn't like you've just taken
imagine
some...
us playing whoever Thailand beat.
It's tough. I mean, this happens at every level of sport, right? Where there's a big blowout, and you've got to say, what is the sportsman-like, the sportswoman-like thing to do here?
Well, the women's coach said that if this were the men, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Oh, that's not true.
We do this to judge the women.
No, that's not true.
Is the women's coach...
Said a bunch of men.
No.
I'm telling you, that is what she said. This is condescending to ladies, and we're tired of that.
Well, she no.
Scooters are coming to Chicago. We've talked about it before, but we're that much closer. Fellas, I, like Eric, feel about this the way he does the Obama Center. I think it's too soon for us to know. My mindset is that I don't want the scooters because of all of the problems that I'm anticipating, but... Maybe I'll be wrong. And if it's not a problem, then what's my problem, right? If 2,500 scooters in select neighborhoods, electric scooters in Chicago, aren't pollution and aren't dangerous, and people, if we figure it out, then we'll look back at these complaints as, you know, not necessary.
This is just another one of the beginnings of something new. The scooters are coming either way, so we can dread them and fight them and be unhappy by them, or just say it's part of the change of living in a city in the 21st century. Here they come.
Both of those things at the same time.
I don't know.
I live downtown, and I've got to tell you, the bikes, the divvy bikes on the sidewalks are a pain in the ass. This is going to be a pain in the ass.
Well, they don't have. I mean, you're talking about the racks, the divvy bike racks.
No, the riders.
The riders.
Well, you got both. The racks are not a problem.
You're not supposed to ride on the sidewalk. I don't think you're supposed to scoot on the sidewalk either. Right?
No, Scott walks on the street. That's the problem.
That's my big problem.
Cars from curb to curb.
No, but it's funny that you say supposed to, Eric, like, oh, that'll solve it. You're not supposed to do that. Well, people are going to do what people do.
People have been getting hurt, right? There have been deaths associated with this because people don't have helmets, and they go pretty fast, as I've seen.
Well, how long do you figure this thing? Yeah, no helmets, and I predict 10 days when these things, that's already started, right?
It starts Saturday.
So I may be wrong, but I think I predict about 10 days into when someone rides it into the river.
There was someone killed, I don't remember the city, Nashville, I think it was, and this guy had come out of a bar, hopped on a scooter, and just bolted through an intersection and was hit by a car that was, you know, driving through the intersection.
There's a little Darwin effect there, right? I mean,
yeah.
But what happens when someone on a scooter gets on and he barrels into an intersection and he hits someone who's trying to cross the intersection and knocks them over and kills them?
I have a hard enough time walking downtown. You've got these, you know, tourists from Minnesota and they're walking five across on a sidewalk. And like, is this what you do?
You just became the old man Muppet in the balcony.
He's right, though. I'm telling you what. People who walk three across, like, this is not a city of people who are working. I want to throw them in the river sometimes.
Oh, no, I
pass them aggressively. I go around the last one,
John,
and then I merge back in aggressively in front of them. And this is me as a pedestrian. I'm the worst.
I stop and ask them where they're from and what they think and where what directions to Garrett's Popcorn.
No, I do what John does. I get right behind them if they don't move over and feel my presence.
Yes.
And I go, excuse me. Which is polite.
On your left.
No, I don't do that, because then they have to figure
do
out left from right.
Do you know who I am? Right. I'm Scott Stantis of the Chicago
I'm tournament. A cartoonist, damn it.
Guys, today the White Sox are celebrating the 40th anniversary of the disco demolition at what was then Comiskey Park. It was a promotion between a doubleheader, a twinighter, but the Tigers, Steve Dahl, the legendary disc jockey, was going to blow up disco records. And they're getting a lot of pushback, so much so that the White Sox said, we're not going to do anything different. The T-shirt giveaway is in a matter of hours here, commemorating the 40-year anniversary. But we are reviewing the complaints, which is them acknowledging that maybe this wasn't such a good idea.
What's the pushback about?
Okay, this is going to sound like a stretch. But A, it was a riot erupted and canceled the baseball game. As an organization, I'm surprised the White Sox want to embrace that. Number two, disco music was not the music of young, white, angry men. This is being seen along racial and LGBTQ lines today.
You mean anti-disco is anti-gay?
Yes. Or anti-color.
No, yeah, I'm sorry. It's something.
Studio.
It's an historical
event.
I'm telling
you, that
happened.
That's where some of the pushback is coming from.
Well, so you're saying that people are saying that by commemorating a crazy thing that happened 40 years ago, you're being anti-gay today.
By the way,
we do that all the time. we judge people today. Ask Thomas Jefferson if we judge people by the lens today that was not there then.
Now, but was it? I mean, you look back 40 years. I'm not. I don't dismiss that point that it was. I don't know that it was how associated it was with gay culture, but certainly it was associated, I think, with black culture at the time. And to what extent was this animus toward disco music?
It was
because it really was just a form of pop music, right?
It was popular music. In fact, my office at Long Beach State, when I was a cartoonist there, I had a sign that read, "Please wipe out disco in our lifetime."
Yeah, it was a joke because it was fluff and it was easy to make fun of.
Yes.
But I never associated with being associated with one race or another.
Punker, I didn't either.
I mean,
Steve.
I think of Saturday Night Fever, and the B freaking G's.
I liked some of the disco music.
Oh, it's fun. In hindsight, it's a lot of fun to listen to. But I was into punk music back then, so it was like disco is a theme to everything I believe.
It was easy to be too cool for disco, and that's why
let me just read you two quotes then, sets of quotes from Steve Dahl. "Sometimes a stupid radio promotion is just a stupid radio promotion. I was looking forward to having a fun night at the park with my family, friends, grandkids. What happened?" This is him today wondering why he's getting all of this pushback. He said it was just a dumb radio promotion. It wasn't racial in any sense. But here's social media. "Disco Demolition Night was the original straight pride parade." Another says, "During Pride Month and in the year of 2019, the team would be better suited celebrating its diverse fan base rather than commemorating angry white teens tearing something down that paved the way for hip-hop, house music, and so many other important movements." And finally, the Sox, citing the franchise's longstanding record on advocating for inclusion and diversity, said, quote, "We are reviewing feedback that they've received after the announcement of the
game." Okay, I'll be a Cubs fan again, I guess. No.
Yeah, there you go. No. But I think this is a tempest in a teapot.
Oh, yeah.
If it's not a perfect promotion, I think we're diving too deep into the subtext here.
Doesn't it just show that everyone's pissed off O-meter is set to 12? It's Disco Demolition Night, something that happened 40 years ago. Let it go. It's not too soon.
You know, I mean, I hate to be too lefty PC about this, but I think there is.
No, you don't. You love being lefty PC.
Well, you are lefty PC.
I do secretly love it. It is a question worth interrogating as to why disco music, of all the nonsense, crappy pop music that was around in the 70s, that they fixated on disco music. I mean, there's lots of just junk.
When I heard Disco Sucks, I knew that was the right thing to say, but I also knew I liked the music. I was in junior college. I was ripe for this music in 1978, 79. And I didn't see it along racial lines at all. I mean, if the stars of that genre were people of color, I didn't draw that line. I just said, okay, so Donna Summer's hot, and I like the music.
Well, and another thing, of course, to remember on the other hand is that the big disco phenomenon of the mid-70s was Saturday Night Fever. John Travolta was white. Just about all the dancers in that movie were white. It was almost cultural appropriation.
We don't have time for our 30 seconds of recommendations or suggestions I want you guys to give me 30 seconds on Donald Trump's week. Is there anything particular you want to comment on? I'll start with, he told George Stephanopoulos that given Oppo research from another foreign entity, he thinks he'd use it.
Your campaign this time around, if foreigners, if Russia, if China, if someone else offers you information on an opponent, should they accept it or should they call the FBI?
I think maybe you do both. I think you might want to listen. There's nothing wrong with listening. If somebody called from a country, Norway, "We have information on your opponent." Oh, I think I'd want to hear it.
You want that kind of interference in our elections?
It's not an interference.
What do you guys want to comment on?
That's traitory. That's traitorism. Period.
And he's going to get away with it. That's it. And once again, Trump is not Teflon. He's nuclear. He can say or do anything and get away with it.
I am struck by the fact that they are stonewalling the House inquiry into the decision to change the census. That it's getting to the point where the White House is just not cooperating with the Democratic House at all in any legitimate or illegitimate or partisan or just any sort of inquiry they want to make. They're not cooperating with that. And now Hope Hicks is going to testify in front of House, but it has to be behind closed doors. And she's going to have a White House lawyer tugging on her sleeve after every question saying, "Executive privilege, you may not answer that."
Can't do this. The Constitution is extraordinarily clear. The Founding Fathers couldn't have been clearer. The Congress is the overseer of the executive. That's how this system works. And if the Congress continues to let this happen, and if the American people continue to yawn at this, it's a destruction of the American system.
Eric, I'll give you 30 seconds if you just take 30 seconds, because you're the only one that really wants to do this. Ready, set, go.
Oh, I just wanted to recommend the February 14th episode of the Ezra Klein Show. Ezra Klein's a lefty intellectual, and he, for 2 hours, he debates and has a conversation with Andrew Sullivan, who is a sort of middle-of-the-road conservative gay pundit, and they're both really, really smart, and the conversation is at a very high level. The Ezra Klein Show, February 14th.
Thank you, Eric Zorn. Thank you, Scott Standis.
Thank you.
Steve Bertrand exited stage left just moments ago. He's getting ready for his Wintrust business lunch. I'm John Williams. The Mincing Rascals are produced by Elif Garris. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on the John Williams Show on WGN Radio.